This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today at the Breakfast Grill, I am talking to Kalem Chen, the chief executive of the family-owned plastics manufacturer, LH Plus Sindhiran Berhad, supplier to some of the world's largest consumer goods companies like Rubbermaid and Mattel. Kalem, thank you for agreeing to talk to me. And let's start with, obviously, the your efforts at recovering from the pandemic, which is, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime event. Let's talk about, let's start with your labor efforts, right, in terms of your people. What have you been doing in terms of getting them protected from the vaccine, from the pandemic, with the re-emergence of the various strains, your vaccination program, and I guess in specific terms also how your production has been resumed since the pandemic has hit.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Chuang. When the pandemic started, we were very careful. We have our EHS team, Environmental Health and Safety team, where we told them, we encouraged them, go out and find out more about COVID-19. This is something very new. And my team was very excited because this gave them a chance to really practice what they were trained to do. We were one of the early adopters. We started working with a group where we did swab tests. I think all of us know, initially the swab test was very, very expensive. You know, my EG was selling it for like 150 ringgit per test. And how many can you do? So we then looked for people whom we can collaborate with, where they gave us special pricing. It was not cheap. The first one we did was with one of those local groups where they were charging us 80 ringgit per person. But despite the cost, I felt it was important that we do it.
Yeah, it's an important consideration, right? Because a lot of the manufacturing companies were taken by surprise by the pandemic, and a lot of their line workers were infected. The rubber glove guys were no exception. I think ST Microelectronics also had a number of them fatally injured. Mm-hmm. What is your workforce now, Kalem? Because you are a private family-owned company, so these numbers are not visible. What is your workforce now, and how many of them were vulnerable to the pandemic?
We used to have 400 over workers.
Yeah.
More than half will be foreign workers. But then through all our optimization, automation, and scaling down, we were able to cut it down to less than 200 now, total, local as well as foreign workers. And what we did was, during the pandemic, we were in the essential services. Of course, we were allowed to operate at 50% capacity. And what we did in the past, you know, when everything was okay, you took the easy way out, you know, you do this, you handle that, and they handle that. But right now, because of that, we had no choice but to think out of the box, where we work with them and everybody multitask. And we found that we actually did a lot more with less people. And we were still able to export. And because we export 85% of our output, and we were able to deliver, so we were not really that badly affected. But to me, it's very, very important that you prevent cases of COVID-19 than try to cure it.
Yeah, so because you are part of the plastics manufacturing sector in Malaysia, one of the biggest sectors in Malaysia, and a lot of you are SMEs as well, right? So your picture of recovery would be quite reflective of the whole sector. Has production resumed back to pre-COVID levels already? And I think specifically also orders from abroad, how have those look like?
Well, Chong, it all depends on which segment you're in. We are fortunate because we have moved ours in the essential, good quality housewares. When you talk about housewares, people always think about pasar malam stuff, you know, dirty, badly designed, flashing, recycled material, everything. But when you're looking at the high-end quality, people always have the impression, if you're doing medical, you're doing electronic E&E, you're high-end. Automotive, you're high-end. You're doing houseware, you're low-end. No, that is wrong. A very wrong perception. When you talk about brands like Rubbermaid, you talk about products like Tupperware, who's, you know, going to sign a 3-year contract with us and all that. Unless and until you meet the requirement, the quality requirement, on-time delivery, good service, and of course, competitive pricing, they won't even talk to you.
Yeah, so a lot of your clients, as you say, 85% of your business is from abroad, and a vast majority of your revenue comes from companies like Mattel, Rubbermaid, and of course, Little Tykes as well. Little Tykes make toys for children. Mattel, you make Barbie doll heads, I think. Rubbermaid, of course, you make the kitchenware. Individually, those companies have got issues, right? Mm. I think Rubbermaid, inflation is an issue, so maybe people are not buying Rubbermaid products, which are expensive. Mattel, of course, toys. They did have a toy boom, but they had audit issues and their CFO resigned. So you've been buffeted. In a way, you're quite vulnerable to whatever happens with those companies. What's the feedback in terms of the business from those foreign companies?
First of all, Mattel Toys and Little Tykes, which used to be a subsidiary of Rubbermaid, which has now been sold, we have stopped supplying them for about since the year 2000 after a fire in the old factory. So they have then also moved out from Malaysia, Mattel Toys. They moved out from Malaysia to Indonesia back then. So those are old customers. But to answer your question, the demand is there. Let's take Rubbermaid, for example, and Medline. Medline not so bad because they are essential services in the medical. Medline is a $16 billion private company. So during the pandemic, before the pandemic, we started diversifying and went to approach them. Again, of course, medical, from houseware to medical, is a totally different ballgame. I have to change my mindset. My people got to change their mindset. We move into 13485 certification. We retrain our people. Let them know why it's so important to do all this. And, of course, now that business with them is growing very rapidly. The other one is, let's say we take my other customer would be Bradshaw International, U.S. company, doing this semi-disposable houseware. And business was badly affected because of the logistics disruption. I think you know probably, Chuang, that the two busiest port on West Coast is L.A. and Long Beach. Right now, they have about 100 container vessels floating in the bay, waiting to load and unload. To aggravate the situation further, freight cost has gone up from about $2,000 per container in 2019 to about $20,000 now. And we sell on an FOB basis, so we are not affected. But when my customer's goods lands in the States, everything's affected. Then some of the orders were cancelled, not because they don't want to take the goods, but they cannot afford it. And even if they do reach Long Beach and LA port, they still have to queue up the demurrage charges and all that. The third thing that's aggravating the issue is a lack of truckers. Those who are unionized are paid by the hour. But many of these truckers are non-union truckers where they're paid by per trip. In the past, it takes about 2-3 hours to load, unload, and leave the port. Now, some of them have to wait between 8 to 12 hours for one trip, imagine. So if I'm the trucker, I would not want to do that.
So Caleb, these are issues that are challenging your clients, right?
That's right. Everyone.
Yeah, correct. Everyone, right? So you talk about changing direction and I think reducing your dependence on Rubbermaid and Mattel, mm-hmm. And going to medical devices and mm-hmm. the Japanese market. Changing that direction would have cost money, right? How did you manage your cash flow during that challenging two-year period?
That's a very good question, Chuang. You see, the last time when we shifted to this current factory about 20 years back, after the fire, everything was raised to the ground and we had to buy all new Japanese machines. So if you look at it from 2001 until now, my oldest machine will be about 19 years old. But because we managed them well, we do have very good maintenance, they're still okay. But if we continue to use them like that and we don't upgrade, we will very soon become a dinosaur. So it is a progressive upgrading. People talk about electric machine this 3-4 years. We were using fully electric machine back in 2007, 14 years ago.
So you didn't have to incur exceptionally high capex to move into the new directions?
Not really.
Okay.
What we did was, like I said, those machines are still good. What we did was we sold off the old machine, bought new machines, negotiated with them. We bought from Japanese, we moved to German technology, the Mac machine. of course, Sumitomo bought GMAC, so it's Japanese German now. We invested about 30 million between September 2019 and now, not only on machines, but on tooling and also on automation. And that's why we were able to cut down from 400 overstaff down to less than 200 and still have higher output. In the past, when we do certain product, it would take about, depending on the thickness on the product and multi-cavitation, 18, 20 seconds. Now we're talking about 6.3 seconds, 7.9 seconds kind of thing, point something of a second and not minutes.
So labor cost is down, output is up, right?
Yeah.
Are you back to pre-COVID level, pre-COVID-19 operational income yet?
Not yet, but we are moving towards that.
When do you expect to come back to normalcy?
2022 should be good.
Okay.
By 2023, we should be back. But more importantly, Chong, it's not the top line, it's the bottom line. You can have very big top line, but your margin is very low. Then at the end, you know, and if something fluctuates, raw material gone up, for example, 35% now across the board. And if the luckily the US dollar has gone up. If the US dollar depreciates, then it will be a double whammy. So we are always very careful on our bottom line, and we do not keep on chasing top line for the sake of growing our business. But you know, then your cash flow comes in, every problem comes in. So we are very careful with that.
So your recovery timeline of 2022 to 2023, is that reflective of the whole plastics manufacturing sector, or just specifically LH Plus?
Well, I would say it's LH Plus. And I would say again, Chong, not only the plastic sector, in fact, all sectors. At the end of the day, you know, it is not just the business per se. It's the leadership in the company. And that's why in LH Plus, you see, we are 100% family-owned business. We export 85 to 90% of product. But other than the head of local sales, who's my daughter, and it's only 10, 15%, all the other head of departments are non-family members. Because I believe in creating a level playing field where people are promoted based on merits, based on contribution and not bloodline.
I'm talking today to Kalum Chen, the chief executive of the family-owned plastics manufacturer LH Plus Sinduran Berhad, which is a supplier to some of the world's largest consumer goods companies like Rubbermaid and Mattel. We'll come back up to this with your thoughts on the investment landscape for new business developments in Malaysia, as well as your thoughts on the environment being a plastics company. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Kalum Chen, the chief executive of LH Plus, is with us on the grill this morning. And LH Plus, of course, is a supplier to some of the world's largest consumer goods companies like Rubbermaid and Mattel. Now, I'm sure as the honorary president of the Malaysian Plastics Manufacturers Association, who which represents your sector, and of course the larger SME sector as well, in your interactions with the finance minister and the prime minister, right, and your sharing of the challenges which are facing your sector, what can you tell the audience in terms of what the government is doing to make sure that the manufacturing sector is given a new lease of life for the coming year ahead?
When I presented to young Ahmad Mulia Tunku Zafru, our finance minister, I did it in my capacity as the president of the Malaysian Consortium of Mid-Tier Companies. Definition of mid-tier companies, if you are in the business, in the services sector, your turnover should be between 20 million to 200 million ringgit. In the in the manufacturing sector, it should be 50 million to 500 million turnover. But some of our members actually doing 750, 800 million turnover. And mid-tier companies forms only 1.7% of total companies in Malaysia, employs 16% of total workforce, and this was down from 22% in 2016. Reason being that many of these mid-tier companies or MTCs have gone into automation, but this 1.7% contributes to 39.9% of the country's GDP, which is huge. So during my presentation, I told young Ahmad Mulia Tunku that there are three things you got to look at. And also recently, in fact, yesterday, 24th of November, I was asked to present to Yang Ahmad Berhormat, Dato Sri Ismail Sabri, our PM. And I told him, because of time constraint, I said, I look at three items only. Number one, market. we are a trading nation. And if we do not have new markets and new customers, we will be gone. Number two, talk about technology and automation, because that is to boost our trade competitiveness. And number three, of course, is cash flow. No money, no talk. So market, that's it. Vietnam has already ratified the CPTPP, ASEP and all that. Malaysia has still not done it. And during the 2.5 years which Vietnam has ratified, and I think you know now, Vietnam has surpassed Singapore and Malaysia as the fourth largest economy in ASEAN. And Malaysia's trade ranking has dropped from 18 to 24 in world ranking, which is bad.
What did the Prime Minister say when you talked about the CPTPP? Because a lot of critics say that Malaysia has not ratified it because of the various social policies that continue to be in existence today and the procurement that necessitates the favouring of certain sectors of the economy over the others, right? So that's one of the main drawbacks behind joining the CPTPP. What did the Prime Minister respond in that respect?
Well, he didn't really respond in that sense. But what we can look at is that I do know they're very afraid that if we ratify the CPTPP, other countries will come in and our SME will be gone. But let's look at it.
Well, not really, because as you say, right, competition is good, right? Merit good. Is good, right? And you drive up levels higher and your value chain, you go up higher in the value chain. Yeah. Malaysia is stuck in a value trap now and stuck in the middle income trap. And a lot of this is because we don't want to allow the competition to come in and shake things up as they rightly should.
Exactly, Chuang. I made that statement. Who are we afraid of?
Exactly.
Who are we afraid of? China, Vietnam, Indonesia. I said those countries who wants to come into Malaysia are really in. You look at ASEAN China Free Trade Agreement. Chinese product has been in here for umpteen years. So they're not knocking at the door. They're really inside the house. So why should we be afraid of? And then the other thing is mindset. Unless and until we have the courage, we have the guts, and we have the political will to make all these changes, Malaysia will never grow.
So, Caleb, from a structural standpoint, you can only do so much with tax allowances and rebates where various machinery is given your incentives, right? Beyond that, it's all about the sentiment and the confidence in the economy, where it's for example, the private sector like yourselves should invest in Malaysia or invest abroad, whether it's Cambodia or Vietnam, right? The lack of political will is an issue because it means that there is no will to structurally reform this country. Is that a fair assumption?
Okay, yes. In fact, many people talk about offshoring. Back in, I think, 20, 30 years ago, everybody talked about moving to China. You know, cheaper land, cheaper. When I was the president of the Malaysian Plastics Manufacturers Association between 1998 and 2004, I was invited to go to China by Haier in Qingdao to bring the plastic white goods manufacturer to invest there. But when I looked at the whole scenario, I did a homework, I told our members, if you guys want to go in, feel free to do it, but I'm not going in. Because you do not go to China because you think the land is cheaper, the labor is cheaper. It is not. And then there's also all the other hidden costs related to doing business there. I said, unless if you are going to China because of the Chinese market, yes, by all means do it. But not to go there, same with Cambodia, Laos or whatever. I mean, the infrastructure is not ready. The power supply is not stable. The political situation is also there. So the solution is not to go offshore. The solution is to upgrade your team. That's why when I spoke about the smart automation grant, accelerated capital allowance, the industry forward grant, and all, I said, unless and until we upgrade our technology, where you use much less people, much better quality, much higher output, and automation, where in my case, I'm able to reduce my headcount. You see, any company, any size, irrespective of whether you're MNC, mid-tier, SME, the segment which uses the most people will always be the assembly and the packaging. In my case, I was able to reduce each line, assembly line, from 10 to 2%. Quality upgrade and output increased 2.5 to 3 times. That's how you compete.
Kalem Chen, the chief executive of the family-owned plastics manufacturer LH Plus Sindran Mahad, supplier to some of the world's largest consumer goods companies like Rubbermaid and Mattel on the grill this morning. Now, are you saying, right, as a reflection broadly of the sector, that despite the political instability and, the confusion that surrounds this government, businessmen, generally speaking, are more willing to reinvest in Malaysia rather than go abroad because of what's installed already? Is that what you're saying, Kalem?
At the end of the day, I am a Malaysian first. Okay, I'm a Malaysian. I'm born here, we are bred here, and many of us look at Malaysia as our country, not China, not elsewhere. So the thing is, if we do not care so much, I wouldn't say we do not care, that would be wrong. If we do not let the politics interfere with the business, looking at it, Malaysian, we are still a good country to invest in. We have very pro-business ministers, pro-business government. Our civil service, let's take MITI for example, they are very, very pro-business. We talk about the KSU of MITI, Dato' Lokman Hakim. Just share my experience. I was invited to a meeting on a Sunday at 10 p.m., not 10 a.m., in his office on a Sunday. When I went there, another group came out. So together with a few other people, we spoke about the pandemic, what were the issues, what are the things on the ground, what needs to be done, and how can you do better. And on my way out, around 11, another group came in. You see, we have so dedicated and hardworking, committed civil servants helping us to do all these things. And we are actually very fortunate. So many people always complain, but I always tell them, we should count our blessings. Look at things from the bright side. Work together with the government to help our industry.
Kalem, we have a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk about how the sector is moving towards a very clean and green future. As we know, plastics has been the subject of a lot of critics from Greenpeace to, you know, Friends of the Earth. It is plastics, and there's a whole campaign against single-use plastics in the world. How is the sector upgrading itself for a clean future?
Malaysia is one of the more proactive trade association in Asia, not just ASEAN, in Asia. Plastics don't have legs. And it's a behavioral issue. If people choose to throw, you know, on the ground instead of in the rubbish bin, then of course, you know, you see all the problem there. And the other thing is that the other one is about biodegradability. People talk about biodegradable plastics, and what they don't understand is this. When, let's say I'm the young people, younger generation, I know it's going to biodegrade. I will just throw on the ground. It breaks down to smaller fragments. The wind, the rain, wash it to the drain, to the river, to the sea, to the ocean, and lands on our dining table because the marine life of things is plankton. So that is very important. We must know what needs to be done to address the issue.
Kalem, thank you so much for your time. It was a huge privilege to talk to you, and thank you for your insights. That was Kalem Chen, the chief executive of the family-owned plastics maker, LH Plus Sindran Mahad, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.